So if folks can hear me, I hope everyone can hear me. For those who don't know, my name is Steve Hart. I'm the chair of the planning board here for the town of Long Island. This is our regular monthly meeting for August. We're going to do things a little differently for today's meeting. Instead of starting right with our meeting, we want to start with a briefing regarding the new state law. LD 2003, I think, which has to do with the issue of housing affordability and municipal zoning. Our interest today is to learn a little bit more about the law, and then from that to try to discern the things that we as the planning board and the town need to be concerned with in the coming year. All right, somebody is phone. Is it anybody who signed on? If you could mute yourself,
it did not do that.
Okay, all right. Let me just Peter, could you mute your laptop, Peter Thornton?
This one's back. Come here, man.
That's it.
See if this is why I'm, is this unmuted? I can't figure this out.
Okay. Well, we have Phil, so we're almost ready to start. So, good. Now I'm learning how to do this. So, let me do something before we start the meeting. I believe I've given all the participants the ability to share the screen. So Robert, if you would check to see if you can share your PowerPoint. Good, you can do that. That's great. That's great.
Hey, man. What's going on here?
Peter.
Peter, I just muted you. You're fine. Okay. All right. Well, it's 5:33. Let's start the meeting. This again for folks who just joined us. This is the regular August meeting of the Long Island Planning Board. Let's just go around and make sure we have a quorum of our members here in the town hall. Is me and Kurt Murley, Mike Lingley. I see Doug McCowan on the screen, Peter Thornton on the screen, Paul Thornton on the screen, and Justin Papke on the screen. So we have all of our members here. So thank you all for that. And we have a number of people, members of the public. So as I said, we want to start our meeting today with a briefing from two folks to help the board understand what's this law and what the board needs to be thinking about for the coming year. Now, just as a heads up to people, this is a briefing from these two folks for the board. It is not a public hearing or a public meeting. It may be possible if we have some time to allow members of the public to ask a question or two of Robert and Phil. But at this point, really just want folks in the public to be able to listen and watch. This is a briefing for the board, the members of the board. So first up, we're going to start with Robert O'Brien. Robert is from the Greater Portland Council of Governments. He's new to GP Cog, but he's not new to Long Island. When we were doing our prep for this meeting, turns out he has been to Long Island a number of times, and so he's well aware of what the island is about. So I've asked Robert to do an overview of the new law, and Robert, if you're ready, love to hear from you. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. When Steve and I were first talking and discussing Long Island, I asked if he knew Mary McElhaney, and he immediately said, yes, I do. I bought her house from her. So we are a small town indeed. Again, my name is Robert O'Brien. I'm a Senior Economic Development Manager at Greater Portland Council of Governments. My background is in public policy, so this law is in my wheelhouse. However, just disclosure, I am not an attorney. We have a very able counsel in Phil Saucer, who's with us tonight. I'm also not an urban planner. So there are some questions I won't be able to answer, but I believe I'll be able to give you most of the cogent points from the law that relate to what you'll have to do to make decisions locally on this law. So let me pull up my slideshow quickly. I'm gonna escape out of this. Are you seeing the slideshow or are you seeing the next slide? Which?
We're seeing the first page, quick overview, LD 2003.
Great. Great, that's what I wanna show you.
Yep.
Advance. All right, great. So I've broken this presentation up into three simple parts. I've taken what I think are the most succinct bullet points for each of these three parts, and then we'll go through them and see if you have any questions. The first are changes to local density per lot. So the law is going to allow by right two units where right now zoning will allow for one. So per state law, there are two units allowed on every new building lot in a residential zone. For existing single family houses, the new law allows the owner by right to build another unit, an accessory dwelling unit attached to the structure or within the structure, and also allows the owner to build an accessory dwelling unit detached from the structure on the same lot. So you might consider that over a garage or a freestanding structure on the residential lot. It will be up to the town what happens to zoning after a building is torn down, whether that's considered a green lot or whether that's considered grandfathered zoning. And that will be more important further down in this discussion as we advance. And the town cannot set up different setbacks or dimensional requirements for these extra units. So whatever is allowed for a single family dwelling, those same dimensional and setback requirements are allowed for these additional accessory dwelling units that an owner may want to install onto their house. So part two, ADU stands for accessory dwelling unit. These are these are the names of these units that are allowed by right now in this law. Four quick points. The town may not require additional parking for these units. Town growth caps do not apply to these units. So if the town were to have a growth cap for the number of residential units that are allowed in town, once you hit those, ADUs cannot be counted for those, to those growth caps. They may expand beyond it. All new development, whether they're these accessory dwelling units or whether they're multi-units, they all have to ensure that there's adequate capacity in the water supply and in wastewater supply. And that'll be more important when we get to multi-units, but that is a prerequisite for adding all of these units. And then for the first time that the state has put into law an allowance for towns to regulate short-term rentals. And we'll discuss that. Those are otherwise known as Airbnbs for a lot of people. We'll discuss that at the end of this presentation. The last section that I've put together are multi-units. So a four-unit multi-unit is now allowed by right in either what the town may set up as a priority density zone. So if you have a zone around your village center that allows for increased density, four units may be allowed by right in those areas. It's also allowed in residential zones where there's a public water or sewer utility. Now I understand Long Island doesn't have that. However, the law describes that as any of these water or wastewater systems that are centrally managed. So if there were a development on Long Island that had a septic system that was co-opted, owned by several owners at once, if it's centrally managed, this would apply there. Now, as I mentioned earlier, all new development needs to prove that there's capacity in the water for water and wastewater. So you can't just build that around there and hope for the best. They would have to prove that there's room for all these additional units within the utilities that are on site. Now, a town may only require two parking spots for every three units. To put that in context, if there were a 10-unit building being built, the maximum that the town may require, not the minimum that the developer may build, but the maximum the town may require would be four units for a 10-unit building. Now, I will just say market forces are going to dictate how much a developer would build for parking. They're going to know what they can sell or rent out for with parking, but the town may only require two per every three units. It's important to note that while a single family structure may build these additional ADUs or accessory dwelling units, as we talked earlier, those same rights do not apply to multi-unit buildings. So if you already have a duplex, for example, there, you do not have the same rights to add additional units to that building as you would if you had a single family structure. And this last one is really important. There's a booster allowed, a density booster allowed for affordable housing developments. So if a housing developer came in and wanted to build in that priority density zone or in some other area allowed for four units, that developer may build at 2.5 times allowed by zoning, and this is state law. So to put that in perspective, if you have a zone that allows for up to four units, an affordable housing developer could build 10 units on the exact same lot. Affordable housing is defined as 80% of the area median income and for rentals, and 120% of area median income for ownership, condos or other ownership structure. And those projects have to have covenants that they will remain affordable for 30 years. And just the last part, some considerations that this board may want to ponder as they think about this law. It will ultimately be important for Long Island to align their local zoning, their local ordinances with these state laws. And you can imagine the conflict, the confusion that will come if Long Island were, or any town for that matter, were to have its older local zoning still on the books when state law trumps it, essentially. And so someone comes to take a permit out and the local laws say it's such and such is allowed, and the state law, which is silent there, actually allows for something different. It could lead to confusion, conflicts, and lawsuits. So it's important to ultimately have them aligned. This law will not go into effect until July of 2023. So there is time to get everything in order, but I understand you have town meetings when new laws will need to be approved. So it's important to have that aligned by then. As I said at one of the earlier slides, it'll be important for the town to determine what will happen with zoning when a structure is demolished. Now, a developer may be incentivized to take down a structure where a greenfield allows for more density, and you may want to consider strategically whether you want the older zoning to stay in place when a structure is demolished for a period of time or whatever the case may be, or whether you are pro-density and you want maximum density allowed by what's on the site when they start building. So just a question that you'll want to define before you're presented with a conundrum. And finally, the last point I'll offer for consideration is the issue of short-term rentals. A lot of towns I work with will say, you know, it's not a big issue here. I will say, as other towns around you start to regulate Airbnb and other short-term rentals, it's going to push the market into adjacent areas where they're less regulated. And so they will suddenly arrive in town. You also may want to consider abutters. So on Long Island, if your next door neighbor were to build two accessory dwelling units, and then they left their primary home and started renting out short-term rentals in all three units on their property, you know, whether that's a good balance for abutting neighbors. So you may want to consider how and whether and if you regulate these short-term rentals. I will also say, I understand a small town like Long Island does not have the staff or capacity to really set up a regulation system. but you may want to pass these laws just for enforcement. So if someone is going to call with a complaint, there's at least something on the books by which your enforcement officer can go out and say, yes, you're definitely in violation and we need to cease and desist. So those are the notes I put together on this law. I will stop my share. Great.
Okay. So let me just ask the members of the board, do you want to have some Q&As with Robert on his presentation? Do you want to wait until Phil does his and do them both together? How do you want to proceed? And I'm open to however.
I think we should let Mr. Saucier talk. And then when we go into Q&A, we should be careful here because we could be here all night. This is coming up. This is new. There's going to be a lot more talk.
Okay.
But we have a gentleman that's in his office. Let him roll.
Okay. If the other members of the board are okay with that, well,
yes,
that's what we'll do.
I agree.
Okay.
Sounds good all to right. me.
Okay. Thank you, guys. All right. So, Phil, for folks who don't know, this is Phil Saucier, the law firm of Bernstein Shore, who is the town's attorney, town's counsel. And has been very helpful to the members of the board over the last, well, since I've been on the board for 6 years, he's been very helpful to us as we do our work. So, Phil.
Thank you.
Floor is yours.
Thank you very much for having me. And what I was asked to do was to go through each of those three areas that Robert just went over, but in the context of your ordinances and what may need to be changed to bring them to be consistent with the state law. And I would say that a lot of this, again, people are working their way through this. This is new. And I can tell you that I understand that there will be some guidance coming out from the governor's office very soon on this. And then there is going to be rulemaking as well from the Department of Economic and Community Development. So hopefully we'll get a little bit more guidance from the state on some of this means, but there will be some areas to continue to work through, just like any new law. So I just sort of a disclaimer. I'll start with where Robert started, which is the new provision related to affordable housing density. And what that provision did, and I'm not going to reiterate everything Robert said, but I'm just going to pull out a few highlights. But if you may remember, that will allow affordable housing density, where any multifamily units are allowed, to obtain a density of at least 2.5 times the density of the underlying district. So just as an example, if it's 1 acre per minimum, per dwelling unit, you could get 2.5 units. And the state is still thinking about whether that means you round up or round down, but that's the basic idea. So this is something that the town doesn't have currently. There are affordable housing density bonuses in many towns that I work with. They work in different ways. Some of them are very similar to what the state is now going to require in every town. And it's something you can think about as you go forward. This is not inconsistent currently with what you have. It's just going to be a new requirement. It is in this whole lot, and I got this question recently at a presentation I gave. This whole lot really it is what we call an express preemption of municipal home rule. So these laws will apply. The legislature has decided this is going to apply, similar to shoreline zoning, which is imposed on municipalities. So all three of these new provisions will apply. But there are areas that you can, I think you could still work in the affordable housing area if you want to encourage affordable housing that goes beyond what this law requires. But this is something where I did take a look at your ordinance. It's not inconsistent, but it will just be good to understand the implication. I will say of all three, of three of these, they only apply, however, in areas that are designated growth areas or served by public or water, water or sewer. You don't have public water or sewer, but you do actually have designated growth areas in your not every town does. So for some towns, this may not apply at all. But in your recent comprehensive plan, 2022 comprehensive plan, I did note that that there are areas on your future land use map, which is a component of a comprehensive plan that shows designated growth areas. And that's on page, if you want to take a look at it in the future, page 170 of your brand new comprehensive plan that was just adopted. So it shows up in areas of light blue on that map. And so that's where you'll get a sense of where these density bonuses will apply. and going right into, and again, I'll take questions at the end, going into the number of units per lot again, also only applies to designated growth areas. So this will only apply for the up to four, I should say, will only apply in those areas that are shown in light blue on your map. But as Robert noted, everywhere else in town where single family houses are allowed, you'll get a minimum of two or three, depending on if there's an existing unit there or not. So that's, again, something that's going to apply. What the state has said, however, even though it's an application, the state has said as it relates to the up to four dwelling unit section, is municipalities can establish minimum lot area per dwelling unit requirements, as long as the second and third or fourth units are not more than the first. So as an example, if you have a minimum lot area per dwelling unit of a half an acre, that means you could have a half an acre for each of those additional lots if you wanted to, but you could not have an additional 1 acre or more for each additional lot, if that makes sense. What a lot of towns do not have are minimum lot per dwelling area requirements. So what they have is just minimum lot requirements, regardless of units. So that's something that you could take a look at if you wanted to and think about the minimum lot area per dwelling unit as you look through what may be appropriate for various zones. And then finally, the ADU requirement, the town does allow ADUs. You have an ADU section, but this is out of date. So of any of the provisions, I think that probably needs some looking at and some work, maybe at the next meeting, is your ADU section. I'm going to briefly review what's inconsistent. So under the ADU section, it's accessory dwelling units are now going to be allowed as of right, where any single family home is allowed, regardless of whether it's in a growth area or regardless of any other density requirements. So this is something that will be allowed. One thing I know that people are already starting to think about is, well, what's the difference between an ADU and another dwelling unit? That's actually not quite defined. So that's something that it's been highlighted as something, because again, there is a difference. There's a difference in how the town can regulate it. If it's an ADU, we really can't disallow them. If it's another dwelling unit, we can at a minimum have the lot area for dwelling unit requirements. So, but in your ADU section, you do have some limitations that would now be preempted. So one of them is that you limit it to two people. There is no limit per se in the new law. You just are allowed to have ADUs. You also limit it only to those related by blood, marriage, or adoption to the primary resident. That would not be allowed under the current law. Anyone, you can have an ADU for any purpose. You also limit it to an efficiency or one bedroom. Again, there's no limit on that as long as you follow in the definition of an accessory dwelling unit. And two others, importantly, you also limit it to a minimum of 500 square feet, I want to say. And under the new law, it's a minimum of only 170 square feet. And let me make sure I'm getting that right. And then finally, 190 square feet. Sorry, the new lot's minimum of 190 square feet. And finally, under your ordinance, it requires accessory dwelling units to be primarily accessed through the existing living area of the primary structure and other entrances. In other words, attached or within. And the new law allows the accessory dwelling units to be within a structure, attached or detached. It can be any number, any combination of those three. So there are a number of provisions in your existing accessory dwelling unit provisions that will be preempted. And so it's worth updating to avoid any inconsistencies as you apply it in the future. It didn't appear to me that there are any inconsistencies in where they're allowed. So you already do allow them. It appears where every single family residence is allowed. So the IR 1 and 2, the IB, I think that's it. So I don't think you have to update it that way. One final thought that before I get to one section that we didn't cover under Robert's presentation, and I missed this, I apologize, but back to the up to four units per lot. One inconsistency there is where you list single family dwelling as a permitted or use in your district, you almost uniformly say one single family dwelling per lot. So that is inconsistent with the new law, because again, you can at a minimum get up to two. Depending on how it's read. So that also was inconsistent. I just want to briefly point out two other areas. One is that law contained a couple of goals that need to be reached. And this is just generally for your background. So first, it requires the Department of Economic and Community Development in coordination with the Maine State Housing Authority to establish statewide and regional goals that increase the availability and affordability of all types of housing throughout the state. And so those will have to be promulgated by the state. But importantly, there is a municipal component to that. They consider information submitted from municipalities about current or prospective housing developments and permits when they reach these goals. But then there's a second new statute that relates to municipalities with the goals, and it's called Municipal Role in Statewide Housing Production Goals. And it's very general at this point and broad, and we don't know exactly how it's going to be applied. But the first provision under that section requires municipalities to ensure that ordinances and regulations are designed to affirmatively further the purposes of the Federal Fair Housing Act and the Maine Human Rights Act to achieve the statewide or regional housing production goals. That's not clear to me what that means or other municipal lawyers what that means. A number of those provisions for example, the Maine Human Rights Act really apply more to landlords in terms of accessibility and housing discrimination issues and things like that. But we'll see as the department works out that out. But then as it relates to short-term rentals, that provision of the law which says that municipalities may establish and enforce regulations regarding short-term rentals. But here's the interesting thing. It says, in order to achieve the statewide or regional housing productive goals. Now, I talked to some people who were involved in the lawmaking process here, and I think a lot of people, when they first heard this, thought, well, meaning municipalities, already can regulate short-term rentals. We have that authority, and many municipalities have. So this just kind of reiterated what we already know. And I know the original bill, or some of the thoughts of the original bill, would have actually regulated short-term rentals at the state level. So I think a lot of us just thought this was a compromise, and it just sort of was a way to say municipalities can regulate. However, the language does specifically tie it to achieving the statewide or regional housing production goals. So I think as we think through whether municipalities want to regulate short-term rental, part of the thought process will be, well, is this somehow getting to our goal, whatever the goals end up being, of achieving some sort of housing production goals, and would short-term rental regulation help achieve that? So I think that that's an interesting connection. The second and final part of the provisions I want to talk about was the funding. So something to keep in mind are there are two sort of buckets of funding that will be available to municipalities with this law. The first is a pretty broad $2.5 million a year that the DECD will have to award to municipalities that are interested in working on these kinds of issues through the planning process. So to help pay for planning and consultants on affordable housing issues from a policy perspective. And they're going to work on a process on how to apply for that and how those funds are awarded. And second, there's a smaller and more limited pool of money of $100,000 to help reimburse municipalities for the work you do on updating your amendments, updating your ordinances to come into compliance with this law. And those monies are supposed to be spent by June 30th of 2023, so just the day before the law goes into effect. So what I've said to my clients, it's maybe not time to do anything yet. It's time to start thinking about what we want to do as we wait for the guidance, and certainly before town meeting. But to the extent you are spending money on me or Robert or others as you work on the amendments, keep that segregated and apply for reimbursement, because that pot of money will be there, and I likely hear from the state on how to access those funds sometime soon. So that's it in a nutshell, but I'm happy to take any questions as it relates to this law.
Well, I have some questions, but I don't want to go first. So on my screen, Doug is on the top line. So Doug, do you have questions you want to ask of Robert and Phil?
I have a couple. One, have you seen any municipalities taking steps yet? And if so, what are those, or any plans to take concrete steps, and what are those? And the other one is, we've talked about the law and the kind of the carrots, the funding and so on, compliances that they intend to provide. What about the stick? What about penalties should a municipality fail to meet certain requirements?
And Robert, if you have anything on the other municipalities side.
Sure. In several towns that I've spoken to, most are in the exact same place you are. They're exploring this or trying to figure out the law. I will say I've spoken with the governor's office. They have confirmed what Phil said. They expect to release guidance to towns this month. And then they are also hiring two employees of the Department of Economic and Community Development who will oversee much of this program. Those employees should be hired in September and October. And then those employees are charged with putting together a lot of the program rules and also more guidance around this law. And so we should have most of that concrete. My own estimation is by the new year. And as such, a lot of towns are just doing exactly what you're doing. They're dipping their toe in, they're trying to figure out whether their own zoning is out of compliance with the general broad strokes of the law. And they're just in the exploratory stage. That's what I've heard so far.
Thanks.
I'd say the same. And I can tell you a lot of towns are just starting to grapple with it. Some towns were engaged in the lawmaking process. And so they have various views on it, quite frankly, throughout the state. I was just at the annual town managers conference last week and actually was speaking on this topic. So a lot of town manager there and got a lot of good feedback. And I would just reiterate what Robert said. Most towns are just simply starting to think about what impact it has on their town. In terms of the sticks, interestingly enough, there are no sticks. It is a law, so it'll apply. And I think what's going to be interesting about it is I would say there's an inherent stick in the sense that if we don't apply them, the provisions, then clearly there'll be a lot of litigation around this. And I've heard already anecdotes of some developers in certain towns saying they, you know, again, these don't go into place until July 1 of 2023, but saying, you know, they're ready to apply and the town better be applying these standards or they will appeal. So I assume we will ultimately have some litigation around this when you have inconsistencies between an ordinance and the law and whether a town just refuses to apply them and part of the planning process. So there could be obviously expense related. That's one stick, I guess.
Thank you.
But it's similar to the shoreline. It's not like shoreline zoning. And I guess that was a decision that was made at the legislative level in the sense that the stick at the shoreline zoning is that it applies. We have to apply. Then if we don't, it's, you know, the state just comes in and imposes it. So if you've ever gone to the shoreline zoning page of the state, you'll see there's a half dozen or 20 towns and they list, this is the shoreline zoning for this town, because that town just never did it. So the DEP imposes it on that town. This law does not have that same, the state does not have that authority. So it kind of leaves it more up in the air, quite frankly.
Thanks.
Is that it, Doug? You all set?
That's it, thank you, yes.
Okay, Peter? Oh no.
Peter, you're muted.
I just unmuted it. No, I'm good. I'm just listening here, listening to Phil. That's all.
Okay.
Bye. Hi, Peter.
How you doing?
Good.
All right. Paul.
Well, this is a huge onion to peel back. There's a lot of issues here that I probably will have to think about before I say anything. One that did come up with, or seems like it might be an issue, is a covenant issue. A covenants trumped by this new law? I assume they would be, right? Any covenants that might be in the in the town?
So private covenants, no, they would not be trumped. So for example, there may be a subdivision, for example, that has a homeowners association. Those are considered private contracts that the town's not a party to and has no responsibility or authority over. So to the extent there may be private covenants on the land, those would apply. And you know, that was a private contractual issue. This just talks about what the town can require or not require, which is just like zoning is today. So, right, we have zoning, we have requirements. You may have the ability to build something under the town's current ordinance, but you might not because you've got a covenant in your deed or your homeowners association documents. So it doesn't change that dynamic in that way.
Okay. Yeah, no, that there's a bunch of them obviously, but that's the one that kind of stuck out immediately, but should be very interesting. I may go back to law school.
that it, Paul?
That's it.
Okay. Justin?
No, it just seems like a lot all at once, and it's going to be a lot that we have to do, but I don't think I have any questions at the moment.
Okay, thanks. Mike?
All set, just processing the information. Good job by both Robert and Phil.
Thank you.
Kurt, thank you. My primary concern, since Long Island has no municipal water or sewage, is land density as it relates to subsurface waste disposal and adequacy of water supplies.
Yeah.
How do we figure that out? That's a tough one.
It is a tough one. The law does have requirements. So even if some of these density bonuses are allowed because it's in the designated growth area, they still would need to show, quote, adequate water or sewer supply. And so there's a few ways of doing that. One is through public water sewer. One is through an adequate subsurface wastewater disposal system or a well. And it's just left as the, and I want to get the right terminology here, but this is something that came up when I was talking to the governor's office about the regulations and what might need to be sussed out here, is that it's, quote, you have to have written verification that you have adequate. And the question has been raised is who reviews it? Yeah. To me, it's fairly straightforward. I mean, in the sense that you would have subsurface wastewater, for example, today has to be a licensed site evaluator. Typically it's the state reviews that issue, but then your local plumbing inspector has a role. So I don't think that would change. And then the same thing for the well, I think is a little bit different. But it typically is the code officer ultimately, but I think there is a question around the water side of it. Cause typically with the planning board, if it goes through the planning board process, you would rely on an engineer or the company digging the well to show you that it meets a standard for a certain number of rooms or a certain number of use or the type of use. And so we'll have to do that. But I've actually pointed that out to the state, is that it should be a little bit more clear about that and on who has the authority to show that it's in compliance. But at a minimum, the law does require compliance of, quote, adequate supply.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, and the other way you do have some control, as I pointed out, at least as it relates to the number of units per lot, is this minimum dwelling unit per lot requirement that municipalities are allowed to implement.
Anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you.
So I have a couple.
Okay.
So we have in our zoning ordinance or zoning requirements, maximum lot coverages, which I think in IR1 is like 15%.
Right.
Well, what happens to our ordinance with maximum lot coverage is if we have requirements to add addition, if the property owner has the right to add buildings.
So that is a good question, Steve. What the law says is municipalities cannot establish, and again, I'm reading from the up to four units provision right now, cannot establish dimensional requirements or setback requirements for dwelling units that are greater than the dimensional requirements or setback requirements for single family housing units. But we can establish requirements for lot area for dwelling unit, as long as they're not greater than the first unit. The way I read that is that's all we're allowed to do. So what we call dimensional or setback requirements, we can't go more than that. So for example, if there's a maximum coverage for single family homes, then that's what we could have for additional units. In other words, we can't go beyond that. I think that your ordinance, though, if you don't mind me, Steve, it's not tied to the use, it's just a general requirement. Is that right? Regardless of whether it's single family home or.
Yeah. I'm somewhat familiar with them. Again, I'm going to reference the comprehensive plan, page 168. We have setbacks. We have maximum lot coverage in IR1 and IR2 is 15%, which is, and then in business zone, 20%.
Yeah, right over here, Kurt, right next to that.
So,
clicker. There's a plug right next to that clicker.
Hold on a second. Yeah,
there's a plug on the computer right next to that clicker.
Yeah. Yeah. We're trying to do
the power problems, Zach.
We're doing some
we're not a flute fuel
system maintenance as we speak. This isn't it. That's not the power. Darn. All right, so back to our regularly scheduled program.
Right. Okay.
So lot coverage is something that I'm still we're going to have to think about that. I think
we're going to have to think about it. It's not clear in the ordinance whether that would require would be. You know, I think there's an argument, honestly, both ways, which is not the way you want a lot to be written right up front. But I would say if you have a general, for example, lot minimum or maximum, in this case, lottery requirement, that applies equally, regardless of how many units you have. So that's the way I read it. But, you know, but I think this it's one of the unanswered questions at this point. I put it in that category.
Okay. This is something we can think about and talk about later. But in terms of a designated growth area, which you mentioned, Bill, I take that expression to be something other than what we have in our comprehensive plan. I think in our comprehensive plan, what the plan expresses is these are areas where growth could be anticipated, but it's not designated as to occur there. Is the assumption is that's where they're going to be is going to be development. It falls way short of saying this is where we want the development to occur, which is what I would take to be a designated growth area.
It's a good point, and that's the kind of thing I think that now you can see why there's going to be a lot of discussion about this through the courts or otherwise.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of thing that's not established. All it says is designated growth areas pursuant to, and they point out the comprehensive plan section, which requires a future, you know, requires a future land use component. So you do have a future land use component in your ordinance. You are right that as I say designated, it says potential growth areas and has some language around that. So yes, there could be an argument there, but again, it shows you how it's not crystal clear to me.
Okay. Did we lose Robert? No, there he is. He just shifted on my board. So for both of you, this water issue on an island or any community that is not served by a municipal water system, we have had the debate at our town meeting for the last 2 years. Over the question of this was specific to cluster development as to whether or not we could reasonably require a developer to somehow either certify or provide some assurance that water would be available for the use of the development. And given our circumstances this year with the drought that we're experiencing, people whose wells have never run dry. There are many people who are now thinking they will run dry. I don't know how a community that depends on wells can be assured of future water supply. Adequate water.
Adequate, supply. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that from either of you guys, Robert? Need unmute.
Yeah, I couldn't speak to, you know, how you certify the future performance of a well. I don't have the technical expertise to answer that, but that is an excellent question, especially, you know, with climate change coming and so forth. You know, wells are going to perform differently over the next several decades.
Yeah.
Phil wants to answer. I also had a response to your earlier question, Steve, so I'll let Phil answer and then jump back to that.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I don't have much else to add other than you're right. It shows that the any kind of technical submissions as it relates to the adequacy issue may have to be more robust than it has in the future as it relates to, as you said, adequacy as it in sort of a longer term view. Because in other words, you would show, you could show that you've got the adequate water supply today. But I would think that professionals in this area would have to take this into consideration. But I also think we got to be careful, because you typically have to, you can only apply the standards that are in front of you, right? So if someone can show you with an engineer that they have adequate water supply and it's certified, then that, you know, maybe what we need to rely on. The issue sounds to me, and you raise a very good point, is that the industry itself may have to think about what it means to have an adequate water supply. In other words, it may be something different than the standard they use today.
Okay, I got a question. Okay. So Robert, hold on, Mike. So Robert, you were going to jump back to.
I was scrolling through the law, and I wanted to bring up priority development zones, and Phil, what your thoughts are with that? Because as I see the law, and I'm on page 8, being precise, a priority development zone is required by towns to be set up, and that they will allow for. They will allow for a density that is greater than density allowed in other zones within the municipality. Now, I'm sure there'll be more guidance coming out, but we were just talking about those density zones in town. It sounds like the town's going to be required to set that up.
Yeah, let me just pull up that language. I don't have the LD that I put. I don't see that in my law. So let me just pull it up on that website.
Sure. It's subchapter 7.
Okay. I don't see that word priority in the law. Are you sure it wasn't an earlier version of the bill or an amendment?
I've had problems pulling up old versions, so I could be out of
line. I just did a word search in the actual codified law, and I don't see the word priority, but I could be wrong. We can circle back to that.
Very good.
Mike, Phil, Michael, a question on, we had a firm come down years ago with the first comprehensive plan, and they did a water study on the island, and that's on record in the previous comprehensive plan done years ago. So if we had another firm come down or company and provide a technical submission, as you're saying, that the island really can't handle this type of law, how does that work? Are we allowed to modify?
No, you can't modify the law. So you wouldn't be able to sort of exempt yourself out from the law generally. These requirements are tied to each application or housing project. So for example, in the water and wastewater provision, which is almost identical in each of these three laws in terms of how to show adequacy, you need to show that the housing unit is connected to, for example, a well, proof of access to potable water. And or for example, under the subsurface wastewater, that the housing unit is supplied. So it really is just like any other application. You're looking at what's in front of you for the application. You're really not looking at a broader picture when you're talking about applications. You're looking at that particular development proposal.
Has there been any discussion about this is step one, and then maybe down the road, this will be modified to environmental factors or natural resource factors?
I would not be surprised if there will be some number of amendments proposed in the next legislative session.
Gotcha.
I would not be surprised.
Gotcha. Yeah. Thank you. So let me ask one or more questions. Phil, from your perspective, I'm trying to think through what you and Robert have given us this afternoon. What do both of you see as the sort of must-dos for this board for the coming year in terms of being in better shape than we are now for the new law in July of 23? I see the big one seems to be the ADUs. Because our the way we handle ADUs in our ordinance is completely contrary to the law. Is there anything else that we really need to be alert to in the next several months?
I would say that is the low-lying fruit, to use a lack of a better term. It will apply regardless of some of these other provisions we're talking about. You still need You still need adequate wastewater, so it's not that. But in terms of the it's not tied to the issue of the growth area. So I think that that's the easiest one to look at. There's some provisions in there, quite frankly, that are outdated even without the lot. For example, there's some. I have some doubt about the requirement that you have to be related to somebody, and whether that would withstand a challenge. So there are some provisions anyway that would be good to look at.
Yeah.
But yes, I would say that's the provision I would look at first. Because I don't think that's where we're going to see as much guidance and movement. I think it's going to be more around this affordable housing density and the up to four units provision.
Okay. Robert?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Phil's opinion about this. The provision that allows towns to decide what happens when a building is demolished.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, that was something that came up in the discussions I had with the governor's office, which was one thing that's undefined is that there's a different number of units allowed if you have an existing unit on a lot right now, or versus if you do not have an existing unit. And so what's not defined is, so what if someone tears something down to basically take it down to ground zero, right? That's not defined, and how you would treat it. I don't know the answer to that, Robert. Sometimes, for example, under zoning laws, we have something where uses go away after a certain period of time. For example, non-conforming uses, if they're discontinued for 6 months, a year, 2 years, depending on the ordinance, you lose your grandfathered status. So it could be something like that. That's a place that it's not in the law as it's written today on what that would, on, you know, how that would work. So that could be an area where municipalities have some leeway in terms of how we adopt ordinances. And before we go, Steve, actually, that reminds me, that question leads into one of the questions you did want me to address, which was, how far can we go? In other words, what can we do if we want to be different from the law? And my answer to that is, when the legislature has preempted an area, and they clearly have, and this is what we call express preemption, then we have to comply with this at a minimum. We can go further. And what further means in this context is we could essentially be more generous with the density. I had that question up at the manager's conference because there was some confusion around that, which is, you know, sometimes people think, oh, we can be more than, for example, in shoreline zoning, right? You could have a larger setback, for example, than what's required if you wanted to, but you could not have a smaller setback from the water than shoreline zoning. In this case, it doesn't mean we could have fewer units allowed, which is actually the question, could we go that way? It actually means we could allow more units, for example, per lot than the state requires, but we couldn't go less than what's being required.
And in that same regard, the ADU, on the ADU issue, the town could allow larger square footages, but the state has a minimum they have to be. Is that right? The new law is a minimum size for the ADU, or is it a maximum size for an ADU?
It is a must meet a minimum size of 190 square feet.
Okay. All right. Peter, you're bold here. Do you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I was just, no, you're right, Steve. I think the key here is, at least in my experience, would be to work on the ADU situation first, as far as a committee, and then the number of units. I think that's really kind of got to, I would think in the beginning, concentrate on this thing and see that we fully understand those prospects, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Robert.
In an abundance of caution, I don't know whether you should set, you may want to consider a maximum allowed number of short-term rentals per property before, and why I'm thinking with it, if you change these laws, an investor comes in and they build three units and they use them all for short-term rentals, do you want to go in arrears and try to curb those? Or do you want to set a sort of a maximum start, and then you can discuss in future years where you want to go with the number of short-term rentals on property? I'm just thinking you don't want it to go ahead of you if someone comes in and starts building these for an investment.
So we have a property owner who has a single a residence, primary residence on a lot. The law allows allows additional structures on the lot and beyond additional structures, ADUs, which can be inside the house, attached to the house, or detached from the house. So one, is it then possible for a property owner to have ADU inside the house, ADU attached to the house, ADU out in the yard?
That's a good question. No. So we should have clarified that early on. So each of these provisions have a sentence that says you can't get the additional bonuses from the other sections. Okay. Right. So in other words, if you already have additional dwelling units, then you wouldn't be. I'll read exactly what it says. So if an accessory dwelling unit has been constructed on a lot because of this law, the lot's not eligible for any other increases in density unless the municipality wants to allow them to. So in other words, you get sort of one crack at it.
So do we have to set a date certain in our ordinance for where that would be, where that would be? In other words, we'll just use a date, July 1, 2023, for the purposes of our zoning ordinance, our zoning and this state law, what was in place on a property on July 1, 23 is the starting point. So if you have a residence that has no ADUs in it or attached to it, at this point now they'd have to be attached. If you don't have any, you could do the three. If you have an ADU attached to your primary resident, you wouldn't be allowed to have two additional ones.
Right, which is why that's one of the things that's confusing about the law, quite frankly, and why the math, you almost need a chart to see how many units you can get. Because if you get the language I just read in ADUs is also in the additional dwelling unit section. So it says if you, for example, if you've added an ADU, you're not eligible for the additional increases in density under the up to four dwelling units section. Similar under the ADU, so that says that, right? But on the other hand, if you had an existing unit just today, you could have two additional units. So that's an area where that doesn't really make sense. Yeah. So I'm hoping the guidance will help clarify that a bit.
Okay. All right, well, we're almost up to the hour, which I asked these guys to do their presentation. So does any of the board members have any additional questions for these folks? And Phil and Robert, we may come up with some in the next couple of days, additional questions. So if folks have some things, they go home and think about some things and want me to ask you some more questions, I may have something in writing for you later this week.
Great, happy to help.
Okay, well, listen, I appreciate you guys making yourself available on what is a lovely Monday afternoon. And this has been very helpful for me and the members of the board, and I'm sure the members of the public as well. So thank you very much for your time tonight.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much for having
me. Thank you.
Yeah. Talk to you soon.
And we have our regular monthly planning board meeting. I'm assuming some folks may not be as interested in that as they were in the previous subject. I can understand that. I'm going to try to see if I can just take a 5-minute break here and we'll come back and do our regular meeting if that's okay with the members of the board. Okay. All right. I'm going to go dark here and I'm going to go quiet and we'll be back at 6:35. So, and feel free to log off if you feel less than enamored by the thought of more discussion from us. Good night, if you are.
on the TV.
All right, 6:35. We're gonna do our regular meeting. Before we go too far, let me just ask folks who are still on the phone, they're still on. How was the video and audio for this so far? Were you able to hear us?
Very good.
Yeah, excellent.
Okay, good. So Kurt's got this fixed. So thank you, Kurt. All right, we still have a quorum of our members. Actually, we have not lost any members. So thank you very much for hanging in on this. This won't take long, our regular meeting. Let's get started. So first item would be to review and approve the June meeting minutes, which Kurt has sent out to us all. I read them today. I didn't have anything to add or any corrections to them. So I would make a motion to approve the meetings as provided by Kurt.
Second.
Kurt, I approve.
Any discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, good. Yeah. All done. Communications. I'm not sure what we have the CEO reports. I'm not sure that I've had a lot of communications with folks. I think I have shared with you guys some of my emails looking for witnesses, subject matter experts to talk to us about in-home sprinkler systems at our October meeting. We've made some progress on that. We had a letter from Matt Byers regarding the application that Byers have pending with the state and the feds for a dock at their location. And that application is here in Town Hall. If anybody wants to come down and look at it during the town hall hours, feel free to do that. So I think that's it for the communications for the month. Next item is the CEO reports that Amy gives us each week. And I'm not sure if anybody has anything here that they want to have a discussion about.
I have one question, and that is on Island Avenue, where those folks have what would you call it? A trailer, I guess.
Airstream?
Yeah. Are they in compliance? Are they
That's in the CEO report and of the July 21. And I think there's something updated there.
Yeah, it looks like they're taking care of it tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, that's what it says. The CEO report for last week says Evans has the barge scheduled for 8:16 to remove the Airstream. And so after that, there will be Jim will sign off, I think, on a building permit. So that is going. And there is a second camper on the island at the corner of the Fern and what's the road that the town garage is on?
Anyway, love it.
Pete Albee is building a house and he has approval from the CEO for his trailer during the construction. But Evans Airstream is supposed to move off the island tomorrow.
Great.
Anything else from the CEO report? Jim is out. This was out last week, and I think is out again this week.
Yes.
So there shouldn't be too much activity with the code enforcement officer this week. So we're all set with that. Next item is for new business is our program of work for the coming year. You recall we had a list, we had a public meeting about what people wanted us to think about and
yep.
work on. First item here is what we just talked about tonight, which is the things that we need to do in relation to the to this new law. I think we have ADUs on our list right now. There may be a couple other things that come up, but I think we at least know that we need to address the ADU issues. In-home sprinkler systems, whether or not we want to require those in new home construction. That I think we'll reach a decision on whether we want to do that after we have the briefing that I'm hopeful we'll have next at our next meeting in October, where we'll have some subject matter experts talk to us about those systems. Boathouses and storehouses for fishing equipment. It's something we have talked about that was we briefly talked about. I've looked at the ordinances. These are some things we might want to do. We'll see what kind of appetite we have as a board to deal with this issue. The one I think that we really might want to do is dealing with the recreation and resort zoning district. I'm not sure private boathouses and fishing storage houses are compatible, really should be compatible with a recreation and resort zoning, but we'll see. We'll see how we want to deal with that. The site plan review application form, I put that on the list. I think if we saw anything in the recent issues that we had with the Hard Shell Cafe about our site plan review application, it's that the form itself doesn't lead one to understand all of the material that we can need as a board to make a decision. And I think at the very least, we need to modify our application form so that's clear to people that what our expectations are for people who apply for site plan review. So that's something that we might want to work on. And then lastly is floodplain standards. If FEMA issues its final floodplain maps for Cumberland County this year, we need to revise our floodplain standards to have the correct citation for those maps. And as you may recall, when we did our floodplain changes last year, we used the state language, and the state gave us the language the state gave us was had one small technical mistake. So we have to correct that when we do the citations for the map. So that's what I have for us to think about for the coming year, the next several months. Again, the goal to be when we have town meeting, we have our things in place that we need to need to have the voters approve anything, that we have our ducks in a row so they can. And the three or four of these would require that approval by town voters if we proceed with it. So what I'd like today is just so that we formally say we agree this is our program of work. So I'm going to move that we accept this program of work for the coming 7 or 8 months that we have remaining in this meeting.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay. Any discussion?
Do we need to include this ADU stuff in this? Do we need to do
it? It's the first item. It's great. First item, yep. This new law, any changes, good. Amendments to the town use ordinance necessitated by the law. So it's just open. Yep. But that is one that I think we do need to address right away. So
is there a need to prioritize any of these beyond that?
Or I don't think so, Doug. I think it's pretty clear the affordable housing one, in terms of the ADUs, is pretty much a must do.
Right.
The other three are optional, I think. And we'll wait and see what the board feels like after we have this briefing on the sprinkler systems, whether it's something we want to bite off this year or not. So. I'd say that we have one really important one to do right now, but the others are things that are potentially good ideas that we want to at least keep thinking about.
Yep. Okay.
So Motion made, seconded. All in favor? Any opposed? Okay, that's approved. Thank you all for that. And then the last thing that I have, I think, is the calendar for the coming for the rest of this period before town meeting, and I guess we have one for June. So we have no meeting in September. I'm going to be traveling, so we won't be able to have a meeting next month. October 17th, our October meeting, again, I'm hoping to have this briefing on the sprinkler system. November, that would be, the topic would be the boathouses and storehouses for fishing equipment, if there's something we want to deal with those topics. No meeting in December. And then in January and February, even in March, I think this is when we need to, if we have something we want to work on for town meeting, we need to start in January. And in those months, we probably, if we have something we want to take to town meeting, we need to have a public hearing. So same with April, I guess. April, we would want to finalize anything that we have for town meeting. No meeting in May because we have town meeting. And then in June, we have sort of the organizational meeting for the next year.
Yeah.
So that's the schedule. That's what I have thought through as things we want to take up each month. I don't think this needs any approval. This is just for informational purposes. So that's what I have.
I got a question for Doug.
Sure.
Hey, Doug, Michael, with your experience, now we're looking at this ADU thing, and Mr. Saucier kind of alluded to the fact that he expects some clarity on a few things. How does these things work when they come out of the legislature, as being this is not going to go in effect until 2023 in July? Will we see more clarification in some of these?
Oh, you're asking the wrong guy. I have no clue. It seemed to allude that we would, but he really didn't know either.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, here's my assumption on what the legislature will do. Towns will do like we're doing right now. They'll look and see what this law is potentially requiring them to do.
Yeah.
And towns will then give feedback to their representatives about whether or not that's either feasible or desirable for their particular community.
Yeah.
And depending on how strongly some towns feel about it and who their members are, there may be changes in the law.
Yeah.
And there may be some changes that just reflect, as Phil was saying, some clarification of things, as you were saying.
Yeah.
There may be some things that are dropped out of the law. There may be some things that are added to the law.
Yeah.
I am not really conversant with the main legislative schedule and their processes.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you when that might be, but it is possible once the ink is dry on the law and people, towns, property owners, trade association, developers, housing advocates look at this law, they're all going to find something that they want to have changed. What that will be, I don't know.
Gotcha.
And the other thing is that quite often there will be rulemaking associated with a law,
right,
which will explain in hopefully more detail.
Rub a comb through it.
Yes.
Right.
And that may not involve legislature changes to the law.
Right.
Kind of like general code.
Yeah. Well, that's what Phil
general
was
code.
Phil said.
Yeah, that's what Phil was saying, that the governor's office is gearing up to have guidance and regulation on this law, and we'll have to wait and see what that means for us.
Thanks.
Okay. All right, that's it for me. Anything other members have something they want us to think about, talk about tonight? If not,
all good.
This was productive tonight. So
yes,
appreciate you guys hanging in for almost 90 minutes. So.
Thank you.
All right. With that, we'll adjourn the meeting at the 6:50, and our next meeting is October 17th.
See you then.
Take care, everybody. Good night.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
All right. Everyone take care.
Bye.